was pretty good. What do you think?
She's from there.
He's from here.
Hanging together.
We make quite a pair.
She's left-handed.
He's right-handed.
Surely not to be disbanded. We are the Mighty Mounties. Oh, brilliant.
With?
With Josh Ozzy.
And Michelle Christine.
Oh.
Brilliant.
I jumped the gun. I didn't even tell people who I was.
But that's what, you know, makes us a good team. Because I was like, I don't know what I did, but I said, oh, with, because you usually say with Josh Odyssey. So I led into that. Anyway, today we have kind of an introspective podcast title. It's kind of like an overcoming obstacles and, you know, how to stay.
Setbacks.
Yeah, overcoming setbacks. Yeah, I like that better. Because I think we all kind of have things that happen in our life that knocks us back a little bit. And it could be small scale, it could be large scale. But like, how do you cope? And how do you kind of overcome and make sure that you learn from them and put your best foot forward the next time?
Yeah, you can't learn from the things you do well. You have to make a mistake or do an error. And that's hard because the ego doesn't think, you know. The ego wants to protect us. And when we were children, we get told off by big people if you do something wrong, you see. So we kind of get a conditioned resistance to making mistakes. But every successful person, instead of allowing failure to accumulate above their head, they use it as stepping stones to their next success.
Yeah, or even as fuel to learn. Because imagine you're trying to learn how to, I don't know, throw a ball, you know, accurately or something like that. And you might throw it and maybe it comes back and it hits you in the face and it hurts. But like, it, almost kind of that.
Sounds a bit insane.
Okay, maybe that was a terrible example.
Throwing it at a wall right next to you. This is pure madness.
I know, that was not a good example when you think about it. I'm trying to think of a better one. But you know, okay, maybe it's like, running as an example. Say you're running and you're learning how to run, you're pushing your boundaries, and then one day you like put your boundaries so much that you like throw up or something like that. Well, maybe some people will be like, oh, you know, maybe running isn't for me and this and that. And some people would use that as like fuel to be like, oh, you know what, I really don't like doing puking after I run. Maybe I'll Google why that happened. Maybe I'll run a little bit like less next time and then build up to that length in the future or whatever. But I just mean like sometimes when something bad happens as a result of learning, that it kind of like, you know how like when LeBron James is playing kind of bad and then someone like trash talks him a little bit for playing bad and then it ends up he's just like 3-point buzzer beaters to win the game, you know, that's kind of like a champion, you know?
Oh yeah, I think some people even train to throwing up. I don't know if they do that at the Navy SEALs, but you know, once you push past a certain boundary,
yeah,
then you become stronger. Not that I'm encouraging throwing up stuff, but yeah, you gotta keep on pushing and like, and use it, because there's a big lesson in every setback.
Yeah, and I apologize for my horrible examples. My example game is not on point today, but I'm gonna, you know, use that those failures to fuel the back half of this podcast being amazing examples. Yeah.
No, that's good.
And here is actually a better example. I do a lot of stand-up comedy. And when I was first learning how to do stand-up comedy, sometimes you go up on stage and you bomb, which is a terrible thing for your mental state. You get off stage and you're just like, man, why am I even doing this? Like, you'll have that moment. Like, why am I even doing this? Like, I did this one set in Toronto and it was on music open mic and I did comedy. So it was just like literally someone had just like played the banjo, like a real happy banjo thing. And then I go on stage and I have some of these dark jokes and it was not the right time to tell them. And yeah, I literally saw this girl who I could tell she was just like, when is this person going to be finished so we don't have to listen to her anymore? And I walked off stage being like, this is terrible. And if you don't get back on the horse again quickly, I find that you can really like manifest into your psyche and it can be very detrimental. So I just went back to another open mic like right after and just got back onto the stage. I was like, I just need to get this out of my system. I got to get on the stage right now.
Yeah, I think when you just know it's the thing you're going to do, that's all you need. And you could be terrible. Like I always mentioned to you, Kevin Hart.
Mm.
And he went on David Letterman and auditioned or whatever. And David told him, "You're terrible." And he spent 13 years before he really cracked it, you know, before he really became the big star.
Household name.
Household name. And, you know, I think that's the key, persistence for what you want and what you think is your gift or your talent that you're going to hone or the thing you want to do. You just keep showing up in the right space, the right time. Eventually someone's going to give you a chance and eventually you're going to improve and you're going to be better, you know? And I think that's why I love, you know, what Kevin represents. And on his Twitter, he says, everyone wants to be famous and no one wants to do the work.
Mm.
Well, he did a lot of work, over a decade of work, and he sucked for most of it, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know.
What do you think when you were a kid, were you like the worst at, and then with persistence and hard work, you got so much better at? Like, was there any like noticeable like subjects in school or like sports or even just like friendships with people that like started off bad but with persistence ended up good? Like, I'm just curious.
Both things. So I had to get an A in chemistry for my degree to qualify for my degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting E's.
Like in like high school?
No, it's A level.
What does that mean?
This is before, just before uni.
Okay.
So
for the North American audiences, this is the last year of high school?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much. Like, pretty much all through the last 2 years, I'm Kevin Harting it. I know that I love this subject, and I want to be great at it. But, you know, if you get an F if they're not sure who wrote the paper. But you get an E for putting your name on properly. But then, you know, there's still a lot of grades to come. And I wanted to get an A. Like not even a B or a pass, you know. I wanted an A. And so I worked really hard. And I turned that E upside down. So it's an A. I had to have even more setbacks. I had to keep doing more exam papers through my breaks and my lunch times. Give that up. You know, people outside kicking the ball. I'm doing an exam, which I'm going to suck out again. Keep sucking at it. And then I got through it, and bang. And actually, you talk about friendships, same. Same with my best friend at school. We were very competitive. We were obviously academic. Now, somehow he was slightly more academic than me.
Somehow?
Somehow.
Yeah.
Given the E. And we used to battle in a way. We were enemies. And then one day, we had to go on this coach trip, and no one was sitting. We didn't have anyone sit next to each other.
What's a coach trip?
So, the school, our class was all getting on a coach, and we're going somewhere.
Oh, okay, a bus trip.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
That's fine.
No, we just use a coach.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing, but, like, I just thought, like, is there a coach of a team coming with you to take you somewhere, and it's, like, considered a coach trip, so I just wanted to clarify, just in case, you know, maybe other people listening would have the same question.
No, I don't judge. I'm very relaxed. So, anyway, we went on this coach stroke bus trip, and it sounds a bit weird, bus trip, I don't know. Anyway, so we're going, and no one else, we don't have anyone else sit next to each other, so we sat next to each other. And we spent, like, the entire trip was really long. So an hour and a half there, an hour and a half back. We did the same thing of just pointing out things that we could see and speaking about them. It was really mental, like, it was really stupid. But after that, we somehow had bonded, and then we became best friends. Now, there's part two to that later on, but we can talk about that later. But yeah, you know.
I'm trying to think, for me, like, what kind of, like, were my big setbacks when I was, like, growing up as a kid. And I definitely wasn't very good. So my dad was really good at tennis. He played for Northern Ireland. He grew up in Belfast. And then he moved to, and I guess this is, like, also kind of like a, overcoming setbacks. Like, eventually he got to a point when he was 25 that he realized, like, if I was going to go pro or whatever, it would have happened already by now. Because especially back then, you know, the time scale of a sports athlete, I mean, you're really winding down by the time you're 30. Now, you know, you have Roger Federer rewriting that book and Serena Williams. But anyway, and yeah, he came to Canada and he had, you know, $300 in his pocket. And, you know, he just worked hard and got a job in the insurance business and, you know, bought a house and got married and had three kids and, like, kind of built a little, you know, life for himself in Canada. So I think I got a lot of my, like, my persistence and risk taking from my dad for sure. And I think he always encouraged me to bite off more than I can chew and follow my passions and my dreams and stuff. So I was lucky. But, you know, he always said to me, Michelle, if you have 99 cents in your pocket and you like to spend a dollar and 1 cent, you're always going to be in trouble. But if you have 99 cents in your pocket and you never spend more than 99 cents, you'll never be in trouble. And, like, that stuck with me for a very, very long time. And yeah, so I think he just encouraged me to be myself and to keep working. And I got, like, one paper route when I was 13 to earn money to save for university. And then I picked up another paper route and then did that when I was 13. And yeah, even though it was cold sometimes in Canada in the winter, as you can imagine, I had a little trolley and I had my, you know, 100 homes worth of news advertisers, as they called them. And I would just walk to each thing and dump them off into the thing, like the mailbox. And yeah, I pushed through because I knew that one day I wanted to go to university and I wanted to graduate without any debt.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah. So, but that's not an easy thing to do anymore. But yeah. So, and did you find, like, with your first university, you found that you weren't maybe super passionate about what you were learning, so you decided to go back to university again, right?
Another one, yeah.
Yeah. And then when you found that that wasn't really working for you, that's when you decided to change gears again, right?
Well, I think it was in the frustration that I was rebelling. I was rebelling more. And so what happened was, basically, it's a bit of a mini origin story for me playing poker, but, like, so we would all doing sciences, pretty much. If you did science, and you'd end up playing poker to some level, at Poker Society, because it was the largest in the UK out of all the universities at the time. And so you play, you know, might dabble, have some fun, it's all good. But you realise that there's probability to it, there's skill to it, skill game, in the long term. Short term, there's luck. Anyway, during reading week, everyone's like, oh, we're going to take a week off to read. The art students are. And all the science students have to stay because we've got labs and lectures. And we're like, that's ridiculous. So I was talking to my friend and he was a rebel as well. And we decided that we were going to take our own reading week. And he turned to me and said, oh, what are we going to do? I said, why don't we play poker? So we're like, all right, we got the supplies in. Got a bottle of Kahlua. Bottle of vodka, some ice, milk, put it together in a pint glass. We had our White Russians. We were ready to play poker. We sat down and we put £300 of my money on.
Mm.
In the course of 12 hours, we just kept playing and we turned that money into $14,000. And that was pretty cool, especially if you're a student. We thought we cracked it. We're celebrating. I mean, we had to... we didn't get hangovers back then, so we were great. And then in the course of 2 weeks, we lost it all back. But we'd invested in poker books and knowledge and trainings or whatever. And then we just decided over that summer that we were going to apply ourselves to doing it. And that's the whole bungalow story, but maybe I leave that. Mm. It was one of the hottest summers ever. Yeah. And we weren't going to allow our own inabilities at the time to get in the way of our ambition.
And how did you deal with, like, the setback of kind of making all of that money in a short period of time and the highs that that brings and then kind of, like, retracting and losing it all? Like, how did you find, like, mentally you didn't let fear or you know, insecurities creep in from that swing?
Well, we've just seen that there's so much opportunity. When you focus on opportunity and on getting better, then it's just about being able to achieve that. It's more about the process of becoming better than than worrying about what you lost or what you had, because you can't do anything about that. It doesn't matter about that. It wasn't about that. It was about, like, can I be the best player that I can be and make a lot of money from this? And we all made money from it to a certain extent. Some people did extraordinarily well. And, I think when you're opportunistic and you know it's the right thing that fits your talent or your natural kind of groove, then you just come back to it. You just keep coming back. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think with comedy it's the exact same way, is that, you know, I didn't go on stage my first few years and, you know, have it be just like slam dunks every time and, you know, being able to do, you know, hour sets and, you know, getting paid lots of money to do what I did. But I think, you know, deep down there was like those seeds. We were kind of talking about this earlier where you're like, you're building and building and building and getting more and more seeds and you're kind of like planting them in the ground. And as you keep teaching and learning and growing and studying and practicing, it's kind of like you're pouring water on these seeds. And like the more kind of water you pour, the more of a chance they are to like blossom and grow. And when I first started doing comedy, I was doing about 300 shows per year. So I was just absolutely getting out there every single night, doing multiple shows a night, taking off the occasional day. If I took off one day, I would feel guilty. Sometimes I do 4 shows in a night. And then, you know, I got a sponsorship to go across Canada where I did 60 shows in 3 months. And I started doing fringe festivals where I would do, say, like 28 shows in a row, no days off, an hour-long set. And just like the amount of stage time I got kept increasing and increasing and increasing. I mean, it was almost an addiction in a way. Because I used to smoke a lot of pot back in the day, which is going to be legalized in Canada. And of course, I only smoked it where it's legal, like Amsterdam. So I only legally smoked pot every day. You can take that for what it is. And I found that once I quit that, I ended up just, you know, focusing so much on my life and improving and getting better and embracing challenges. And yeah, I almost felt like comedy replaced pot in a way, but in such a great way, in so much of a better way, in so much more of a personal development way. And I kind of found my calling.
So you were hanging around people you liked and they were giggling.
At first I was like, is giggling just like a
what's
British
that?
Term for something? There's always some British term that I don't know.
Oh no.
I like that you went and closed the curtain. I'm just curious, What was it about the open window that was freaking you out?
You never can be too careful.
You can't be too careful. Because 2 people recording a podcast in a family room is just disastrous.
You say that now, but I could have just saved your life. Okay? So don't. It's always funny and laughing until axe murderer turns up.
Yeah, well, if an axe murderer turns up, like, which of the 2 of us is going to have to take it on?
You?
I have a feeling it would be me.
No, it would be you. Both of us.
Yeah, both. Yeah, that's right. That's way better. Why would we just do one person? That's true. That is true. So, and I'm ready to take on like more challenges, because I think that every time like I've hit a setback, like it does, and I don't want people to think that when I hit a setback, it doesn't hurt or it's not something that like is upsets me or makes me like, honestly, part of why I want to overcome it is because I don't want to feel like that again, or I don't want to let it win. Like, I don't want a setback to mean that I'm not going to overcome this challenge. Like, I don't want to be defeatist. I want to figure out, okay, what did I do wrong? Why did I do it wrong? How can I eliminate doing it wrong again? And then how can I overcome this challenge? You know, like, I think, yeah, of course it hurts, but that's the pain makes me not want to experience it again.
I think we talked about in an early episode about the importance of encouragement. You know, when people first do something, they're always going to fail at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, when the babies are bum shuffling, and they try and walk, and they try for the first time, they're going to fall down. And that, it's not over then, is it?
No.
The parents encourage them to try again. Try again. So We've got to remember how we all learn how to do things. We kind of forget because we all walk around so easily, but if we hadn't had some good encouragement, maybe we have more bum shuffers in the world.
I mean, that's a great point. And when I first learned how to snowboard, I was 22, and I was in university, and we got these, like, really cheap, like, three-day passes to a place called Chickadee. And it was funny because, no, Chickpea. It was Chickpea. Okay. And what was crazy about this is that it was basically a garbage dump. Literally. It was an old garbage dump. And because it made, like, this little tiny hill, they turned it into a ski thing. And it was a joke. I mean, God, if anyone in British Columbia or, you know, in the Alps or whatever saw what people in Ontario would ski down and pay good money to ski down, they would laugh. But anyway, and I don't like being bad at anything. And I was so terrible. I was like the worst. I think I was like the worst snowboarder to hit the slopes that you could ever imagine. And I was just like, I don't want to fall on my ass all day anymore. And I went back the next day. And then I went back. 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 And I snowboarded all summer. Or all summer. That's not true. I snowboarded all winter. And then by the time it was the next year, some friends were going to BC to do some snowboarding. And I was good enough to go with them, which was awesome. But like, that was the goal. It's like, I don't want to have to turn down some like crazy awesome vacation in BC because I'm so terrible at snowboarding. Like, get as good as you can. Do whatever you need to do. Fall on your ass a bajillion times. But like, get back up. Get back up every time. And like, go back down again.
Yeah, I think the way you frame something to yourself is the most important thing. And we can be our own harshest critics.
We can.
And I think we've got to be like, you know, if you were encouraging your kid to do something like walk or ride a bike, you'd have a lot more patience.
Hmm.
We all have this inner child inside. So we have to be patient with it. It's not always easy because we want to achieve so many things and do. We live in such a fast world and everyone's comparing as well. Everyone's comparing things. And I think you can only live your life. And you got to, like this is something I remind myself. What do I really want to do? What was I really great at? What do I really like, enjoy? I think, you know, when you really commit to your purpose and what you want out of life, it doesn't matter what the other stuff that's coming, because you're like a salmon swimming upstream, just pursuing that thing that you know is right. It doesn't matter about this stuff.
Well, you like to, I mean, write a little bit, and I was listening to some of your kind of your story that you had written, like your kind of your almost like fantasy, kind of like a children slash adolescent. Kind of more like magical tale, and I was really enjoying it. But I know that like writing sometimes by yourself is kind of difficult and things like that. But like, do you think that that's something that you're going to be able to find kind of a process around, like the setbacks or obstacles of how it's difficult to write? Like, it sounds difficult to find inspiration or motivation to write knowing you want to finish it.
Yeah, I think what I actually really enjoy is telling the story. So in that case, it doesn't even have to be finished. If it's finished, then I'd have something to share with people. But I could still tell it to someone whilst writing it. And that's really what I enjoy about that process, is that I'm sharing something special, magical from the world of the Imaginarium, the imagination. You know? So that's really what I love to do.
And I feel like it would be really fun, like, to read it to children. Like, I think that as an author of books that are, like, skewed a little bit younger, I think one of the greatest things about, you know, the experience would be, yeah, going into a school and like reading it to the children that already love it. Like, I can't even imagine. I'm sure J.K. Rowling loved taking Harry Potter to a classroom and just like reading the first chapter to like people that were just absolutely enthralled. People appreciating your work. There's not a lot of better feelings out there than that, you know. So
who wasn't Harry Hogwarts at the time?
Yeah, unfortunately, Harry was at Hogwarts, so she could only read it to some muggles.
Oh.
Yes, just some muggles. Did you read any of the Harry Potter books?
I tried to read some of the first one, but what frustrated me was, I think she deliberately did this, or maybe, this is a fabrication in my mind, but it's like, it's meant to be simplified language, right? The first one, and it gets more advanced, or is that just...
I would say definitely the first one's probably the easiest read of them all, for sure.
Definitely. So, you know, the movies are great. I'm not a big reader, I like to listen. I've listened to the audio of it, so that might count. Yeah?
Yeah, definitely. So you've listened to, like, literally the audio book of all eight?
Pretty much, yeah.
No, it was just seven, but they made eight
movies? They cut two in half.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
Because they had to have a little dance in the tent.
Mm.
In the first one.
Yeah, the first one was great. A dance in the tent, though. What?
It was kind of a bit of spontaneity, but there was something about... They're pursuing all those things that they have to find. I've forgotten what they're called.
Oh, Horcruxes?
Yeah, so they're trying to find all the Horcruxes.
Yeah.
And then Harry Potter's in the tent with Hermione.
Yeah.
And like, it's almost like something was meant to happen to make Ron jealous.
That's true.
So then they just basically improvised Harry Potter dancing... Daniel Radcliffe was dancing with the old girl, Emma
Watson. Yeah, Emma Watson,
Hermione Granger, and the people filming it loved it so much they were like, "Yeah, we'll definitely use that."
Wow.
So yeah, it's not in the book.
Yeah, well, I did a little dance. Like when I was first ever going out to clubs and stuff, I was a terrible dancer. I was like the worst dancer on earth. But I just watched my friend, and she was friggin' incredible. She was such a good dancer. And I think that, yeah, just looking at other people, too, when you're struggling to do something and you want to get better at it, I think it's always good to try to find people within that industry or within that hobby or whatever. And, you know, you don't have to befriend them just completely out of, like, you know, a desire to use them or anything like that. But just... naturally finding people that you click with within industries that you enjoy and sharing with them and stuff. And you can oftentimes really pick up a lot of great knowledge and they can help you or you can learn from them by observing them and really kind of improve your skill set, I find. Like, yeah, I don't know if you found that ever in any of your pursuits where you've just kind of had, you know, people that were experts in their field that were your friend and they really helped like speed up the process of learning for you because they could like help teach you, but that they wanted to teach you because, you know, they liked you.
Yeah, I had that with poker and, you know, I've always had that to some degree, you know, connecting with people. And like you say, you don't have to be besties to ask to see someone else's work or just what they've done or doing. Just the insight, a question. People are wired to help one another.
They are. I really feel like that's the case. And it doesn't even take knowing people like that much. Yeah, like, I'm close with my parents, but like, I found that even just watching other people overcome obstacles and setbacks really like inspires me to do so as well. Like my mom, it must have been really difficult for her because she came out as a lesbian after 30 years of marriage, which is not easy. 30 years of marriage. And at first, I wasn't sure exactly how my parents were going to be able to deal with it. Like, is she going to be able to find someone new? Is my dad going to be able to find someone new? Are either of them going to fall into, like, a deep depression because of such a crazy lifestyle change of building a life with someone for 30 years and then that life being kind of broken? And so I was really curious to see how it was going to play out. And I was really proud of my parents for how they handled everything. Like, they always say that a lot of people, you know, predict, like, oh, when people get divorced, you know, the only people that win are the lawyers. That's what a lot of people say. And my parents...
Leak house.
My parents didn't even...
The lawyers end up with all the money. And they have to sell the house.
That's true. And so my parents, you know, had our family home, and my grandmother left a home to my dad and Lindsay as well. So they had kind of two homes between the two of them. And they didn't get a lawyer. They did it amicably, you know, switched assets and, you know, each took a house and... And yeah, it was just a really good kind of example for me that, you know, when people have setbacks happen in their lives, you know, you don't have to let it change you or make you bitter or make you want to have like revenge or vengeance against somebody else. Like a lot of times when people have setbacks, they kind of let it change them and they let it, yeah, they let it kind of eat them alive a little bit. And I don't know, how deep you want to go. You don't have to talk about your parents, but like, have you found like anyone else in your life that you've seen kind of go through obstacles and like handle it valiantly and it's been like an example for you?
No.
What? No, not in your entire life? That's great. Or I guess in the opposite, have you seen people walking into setbacks and then it ends up destroying them and you realize that that's not how you want to handle it?
Every day. On the train, people drinking. No. I don't know. I think what I was going to say was, if you're going to focus on, say, an example with your parents, it doesn't matter that your mum fell in love with someone else and that other person was the same sex. That doesn't really matter. It's the fact, like, the truth of how the relationship is with your parents. And they're like, and then your dad's seen that and it doesn't matter, you know, that he just understood. And that level of understanding and really seeing the situation in a clean way is always the best, you know? I think people get distracted. Oh, it's because of this or that or whatever. It's like, it's not. It's just, it's not working between us. Or, you know, this part of the journey that I'm trying to pursue isn't working. So I wanted to just share that while it was in my head. Is that all right?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, and then examples. I think I like looking at business examples. So Jack Ma, he applied to Harvard a number of times, never got in. And then there was a franchise that came to China, and he was one of 20 applicants to run this franchise. And 19 people got it, and one person didn't. And that was Jack Ma. And so he goes on and on, right? He's getting crushed.
Jeez, Jack Ma.
So he set up Alibaba, and now the guy's a billionaire. And it's like, his outtake on life is really cool. I like that. He's very outspoken about how it's a lot of EQ stuff, persistence. Because if you know it's going to come, the universe is going to reward the individuals that have the skill sets and the ability to, in the, you know, at the right timing. That's how it works. And so if you just keep working on yourself, then all the stuff comes. It's going to come. So just keep working on yourself, bro.
Hmm.
Like, don't let the setback be better than you. It's like, I heard this from the mentor that I follow. And he was saying that whenever other people are, you know, saying no to you or not supporting you in your business pursuits, and you know that you have something, he likes to think of it as like, just like kind of what you said with LeBron, it's like a professional athlete on the pitch, and when they get booed, it's just an opinion. It's not the result. It's not who you are. It's what you do with the ball that happens, you know? So, and if you know that you're great, or you know that you want to pursue greatness, or to whatever level, you're going to bounce the ball and you're going to have a shot. You're not going to let a boo stop you. So why are you going to allow that happen in other areas of your life? Oh, someone won. Cool, next game.
Yeah.
Next.
And I think that's one of the reasons that I did my Cross Canada tour, my first one, was that I could do half an hour of material, but I wasn't finding the stages, right? I was like, oh man, I know I have half an hour, but like I'm getting 5 minutes here, I'm getting 5 minutes here, I'm getting 10 minutes here. Like I want to have 30 minutes for 3 months every night. That's what I want, 30 minutes every night for 3 months. And I thought, well, if I can't find it, I'm going to make it. That was
my... Ooh.
Yeah, I'm going to make it.
Like Jack Ma.
So I picked up the phone for 2 weeks, and for about 14 to 16 hours a day, I would call place after place after place. Hi, my name is Michelle Christine. I'm coming to, you know, Timmins, Ontario. Hi, my name is Michelle Christine. I'm coming to Regina in Saskatchewan.
Excuse me?
Regina, Saskatchewan. Hi, my name is Michelle Christine. I'm coming to Vancouver, British Columbia. And I would call over and over and over and over again until I found 60 places that said yes. And I probably called like thousands, literally. But it's because if you can't find it, you have to make it. And I really firmly believe that. I don't like having to rely on other people for my opportunities. I can't stand it. And so I've been learning how to fish my whole life instead of, you know, being given a fish or buying a fish. And I think that that's really important, is that if you really love something and you're passionate and you're talented, but you can't find the avenue or the audience or a person to give you that opportunity, like, do whatever you can to get noticed, whether it's social media, whether it's making, you know, some phone calls to other people in the industry or whatever. Like, don't allow other people to be the reason you're not successful.
That's great. And, you know, I think that's why your stand-up stands out as very different from others at the fringe, because you share a lot of that journey of persistence. You know, it's very unique. I've never seen anything like that before. So, yeah, embodying persistence is the key.
Yeah. And I think it's funny because we've talked a lot about, like, do you have a superpower? Do we all have a superpower? And what's your superpower? And then when you said, Michelle, no, persistence is your superpower, I really thought about that. And I was like, yeah, it is. Because I'm not like, you know, an A plus this or that. You know, I'm not like I was never the best athlete, or I was never like the most popular person in school. Or, you know, there was a lot of things that I was never the top of in anything. But I've always really tried to keep at things, even though I wasn't that good at them. I would just always like keep trying over and over and over again. Like, the way that I can just grind out something I'm not good at until I'm as best as I can be at it, like, that's what I have. And then I just had to find the thing where my natural abilities aligned with that persistence, you know, because no matter how much I try to do physics to create a rocket that could shoot up into the air, like, I'm just never, like, that's not, persisting at that is not really going to lead me super deep the way that people that have a natural ability for physics and engineering and mechanics and all that kind of stuff. But, like, what I was good at was writing speeches, performing speeches, being a bit bold and ballsy when it comes to talking to people and stuff. So, yeah, I just found that, like, performing and booking tours are, like, two things that I'm just really, really good at. And that's what aligned well with kind of my career. Yeah.
Simples.
It wasn't far from simple, but, yeah, it was, And I hope that if people are listening and they're thinking, like, oh, you know, I'm not really, you know, super fulfilled in my life, or this kind of happened and it's taken the wind out of my sails or whatever. Like, you got a breakup, or you've gotten let go from a job or whatever it is. Cause there's so many different ways you can have setbacks in your life. But yeah, like, kind of like what Josh was saying, is like, work on yourself when those things happen. Like, if someone doesn't want to be with you, I think the best way to rebound from that would be improving your life in some way and yourself in some way, whether it be like changing your diet and eating healthier or working out or learning to do a new skill or, you know, applying yourself more at the things that you're good at to see what outcomes it can happen to, because people are really drawn to passionate, hardworking people, I think. And people are not drawn to a defeatist negative mentality of like, oh yeah, the world's against me or whatever. Like, you really have to you have to dig deep, and you got to find within yourself the power and strength to move on and to get better and to treat each day like a gift. And like, how can I make today allow myself to be a better version of who I was yesterday?
Oh, that's great. That's the key. And I think, you know, setbacks are going to come even when you're at the very top. At the top of your game, at the top of your industry, top of things. It's part of the game. And I think It's not really talked about at school. It's not really talked to you by other people. But when you know that that's part of the path, then it's like, yeah, do you want to keep up the path? You can get pushed back here and there. There's going to be some wind. There's going to be some obstacles, some rocks to climb, some things to get around, some things to get over. When you know that's the journey you're on, then like the hobbits from the Shire, you pack up your bags and you go on it. And it's like, you know, they didn't want to necessarily have to leave the Shire and, you know, have lovely cups of teas and have a good time. But, you know, if it needs to be done, let's go on the journey. And those giant eagles aren't going to take us there. They'll take us back, but not there. It's not a plot hole. It's not a plot hole, okay? You have to do the walking yourself. And I think that's true in life, though.
It is.
You have to go on the bootstrap of your hill first, and then when you get there, you get to fly first class back. So it's a good story.
Mm.
That's how it is.
Yeah, because I remember someone asking me, they're like, "Oh, Michelle, like if you had, you know, $1 million or $10 million, like what would it be that you'd be doing in your life?" And I said to them, I would be doing the exact same thing I'm doing now, but like staying in nicer hotels. Like, that's the funny thing. It's like your path and your purpose and stuff. It might be a struggle at first, and you might be, you know, not having the best meals or not staying in the best places, or maybe you're kind of having to do that grunt work of like, yeah, like for me, in my case, is like going to those open mics and spending 3 hours to get on stage. And that sucks. I mean, no one wants to spend 3 hours to get on stage to do 5 minutes, but you kind of do have to pay your dues in anything you want to get really good at. And like, kind of like what Josh was saying with the wind blowing you back, like if it was easy to be successful or to make it to your top of your field or your top of your sport or whatever, like everyone would be doing it if it was easy. It's the fact that it's not easy. It's just not easy. You're going to be running into things. Maybe you'll have an injury, or maybe, you know, you'll have a coworker at work that you just don't get along with that well. Or yeah, maybe, yeah, you just have to travel a lot for your job or whatever it might be. But the early years of developing a skill in anything is a grind, and there's a lot of grunt work, and it's not always going to be enjoyable every single day, but it's like a long game for anything that you want to get really good at. And not giving up is absolutely the cornerstone of that, because imagine if you could just like get a loan from a bank easily, create a business idea easily. Everyone loves your business idea easily. Like, that's just not how it works. It's not how, like, if you read anyone's biography of how they started their businesses or whatever, I mean, The Rock was sleeping on pea-stained mattresses in Canada, you know, being kind of a CFL player because kind of an injury had limited his ability to be in the NFL in America. And, you know, he didn't allow that to get him down. He just thought, okay, no, I can't get into the NFL. All right, I'll be into the CFL. And then when he realized that that wasn't really panning out, did he give up? No. He's like, okay, what am I good at? Well, I am strong and I am powerful and I am fierce, but like, oh, you know, my dad did some of this wrestling stuff. Maybe I'll put everything now, all of that work ethic that didn't pay off in the CFL/NFL, and I'm gonna go all in on becoming a professional wrestler. And then he did. So he had so many setbacks, and a lot of people with those setbacks would have just been like, all right, well, I guess this isn't for me. I'll go and I'll become a, you know, a bank teller or whatever. But like, he saw in himself a fire, and he pivoted until he found what aligned for who he was and what his body was and what he could do, what he was capable of. And now, you know, it's got like over 100 million followers on Instagram. But it's like, you cannot give up when your chips are down.
Has he stopped pissing on the mattress?
He was not. I don't think he was the one that was pissing on the mattress.
Who's pissing on the mattress?
Or maybe he was pissing on the mattress.
No, he wasn't. He's a lovely man. Like, he's just very respectful.
Yeah, but a lovely man could still have bladder control issues when they sleep.
Not The Rock.
Not The Rock.
Don't ruin the image.
Yeah.
I've seen The Rock in a different light.
Have you ever had any problems with bladder control issues?
No.
known people that had to wear like shock jocks and stuff because they would pee the bed a little bit, which I thought was like the cruelest thing on earth. A shock jock? Imagine getting electric shock every time a little bit of pee came out while you're sleeping. That's like crazy to me. Like, I think it worked, so, but imagine that.
Sometimes you got to train. A few setbacks in life.
Yeah.
And a night pee.
Yeah.
But that's how you keep the mattresses dry.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe if people had worn a shock jock before they got on the Rock's old mattresses, then he would have never had an issue.
Perfect.
Have you read his book?
No.
Okay.
But he's amazing.
Yeah. Mankind had a good book too. I think his was even better, just as a...
Mankind?
Yeah.
Who's that?
He was also in the WWE or WWF formerly, but yeah. So he was... He was like Cactus Jack, Mankind, he had a third one. I can't remember. But anyways, his story was even more fascinating.
Oh.
Yeah. Because a lot of people make excuses, don't you find? Like when they don't get to where they want to be, they're like, oh, you know, I wasn't attractive enough, or I wasn't this, or I wasn't that. But really, it's an excuse because there's a lot of people out there that aren't like the most like attractive or tall or this or that or rich, and they completely make it to the top.
Well, you know. Some people say they still aren't. No, some people say that, don't they?
What do you mean?
Like haters. They say, oh, why them? Why are they there? Why not me?
Well, Taylor Swift has a good song about that.
Shake It Off.
Yeah. Because the player's gonna play. And the haters gonna hate. But I'm just gonna shake. Shake it off. Which I do sometimes play if I'm ever in a bad mood. Like, do you have a go-to feel-good song that you play?
I can't sing it.
Well, like, what is it, though?
It's like from The Lion King.
Yeah?
No, it isn't.
Okay. Oh, man, I was really excited. I was like, I know a lot of that soundtrack.
Kuna Matata.
Do you sing that one?
No, I don't sing.
Or like dance to it? Or what do? You just put it on?
No. But I just like that song.
Yeah. That's a good feeling.
Means no worries.
For the rest of your days. Come on, you got it. It's
a travel free.
That was not the right
philosophy.
Word. Hakuna Matata. That's a good one. I like it.
All right.
I think that you don't think you have a good voice and that's why you don't like to sing.
Well, I don't. A terrible singing voice. No. It's quite obvious.
I don't think it's too bad.
Wow.
But I just feel bad. Josh has I think he's allergic to his cats, which is tragic. So that's another setback he faces every day. But his eyes water more than I've seen any...
In this room. It's in this room.
Yeah, but I mean, we should tape these somewhere else because I feel bad. I always look at you and it looks like you're just like, he's got tears running down his face. He's rubbing his eyes. They get all red and stuff. And here I am just like talking to Milo a minute and I look over and I'm like, oh my God, this is tragic.
It's just a setback.
Yeah, it's just a setback. But like, do you think we could tape this somewhere else where you wouldn't get your poor eyes all watery all the time?
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, we could.
Well, do you have anything more that you want to share on the overcoming obstacles thing?
Well, I think we share this from the education podcast,
mm-hmm.
but the reason why people end up quitting, I feel, is like they're overwhelmed or they're doing the wrong thing. So if you're doing the wrong thing, okay, it's good that you quit, but as long as you put that energy into something else that you really want to pursue, then that's the lesson. If you're overwhelmed, then it's usually because we've been taught in our education system that we should have all the answers, that we should only have our own work, our own way. I don't know, I'm very much like that. And it teaches me one way of being, and actually, kind of like what you shared before, opening up and finding other people that can help you in little pieces of the puzzle. And there's a real enjoyment around that, I know. It's going to take longer, but you get further. So I would say if there is an obstacle, don't spend 5.5 hours trying to do something technical when you're not technically minded. You know? Much better spend that time trying to connect with technical people.
Mm.
And then you can get on with your podcast.
Yeah, that's true. And it is difficult, like, especially when you're starting out. Sometimes you don't always have a budget in order to you know, hire people. But I think that there's a lot of people out there that are looking to help and connect. And maybe there's something that you can do that's like bartering with those people. Like, I might not be able to be technically minded, but like, I went and did, do you know, like, E3, like those big kind of like tech.
Yeah, I love that.
Okay. So I went there and, you know, there was a bunch of tech people that I interacted with, and I might not be able to code or do that sort of thing, but I can do comedy. So they kind of invited me and said, hey, Michelle, if you ever want to do like a little comedy show, and they called it like Stragicon or something like that they had. And like, that would be something where it's like, okay, maybe this person can help me create an app, or maybe this person can help me, you know, get OBS to work a little bit easier with Twitch for like live streaming, and then I can pay them back by like doing, say, a comedy show or something like that. Like, I don't think you necessarily have to always you know, pay money to people, but yeah, like, I think
so. You help them with their kind of setbacks, because maybe if you're more technically minded, you're not as outgoing and you haven't pursued you know, that kind of gauntlet of finding ways to connect with people one to many from stage. You know, most people say they fear public speaking more than death.
Mm.
And as Jerry Seinfeld says, so at a funeral, people prefer to be the guy in the box rather than the guy reading the memoriam.
Yeah, it's always surprised me that people are that afraid of public speaking, because, like, you know, it's talking in front of other people. I don't know. I guess that's why I like doing comedy, is because I've always never feared that. Like, did you ever have to, in class, where they had like, you'd have a book that you guys would be reading as a class, and then they would go around and then each person would have to like read a paragraph? Did you ever do that in school?
No, they just asked me and my friend to do it.
No, but they want everyone to do it.
No. Like, later on. Like, yeah, so middle school, everyone did
it. Yeah, middle school.
But, like, later on, they would just get the people who wanted to do it, and that was me and my friend. So yeah, we would just take turns, everyone had to listen.
No.
We didn't mind standing out.
Well, no, we definitely didn't do it that way. It was a whole class, everyone had to read, you know, a paragraph or two. But what they would do is, if people were good at reading out loud, then they would read them out loud. But then if people weren't good, like, there was one guy, I felt so bad for him. He literally, like, he could barely get out a sentence because of how nervous he was. And they would take pity on him for sure and, like, let him only read about, like, one or two sentences. Because, yeah, for me, it's hard to understand what it's like. But, I mean, I can empathize. It's just hard because it's something that I always just enjoy doing. But what was cool about him was that I was a frosh leader.
Excuse me?
Oh, you don't know what that is?
Is that some sort of cheese?
No. Okay, in second year university, I was... Like, do you guys have like... Okay, I guess not frosh week. Orientation week.
Is that when you do a lot of paper folding? That's origami week, sorry.
No. Okay, I'm talking about like...
When you first start.
Yeah, like when it's your first year of university, like kind of like your first week. And
Freshers week.
Yeah, there we go. Freshman's week is what you
freshers.
Call it? Freshers. Okay, we call frosh. Oh, yeah, so different, so different. They both start with F. And
well, yours sounds a bit French.
Frosh? I don't know. Anyway, so my second year of university, I was a frosh leader.
Whoa.
And I saw him at university, the guy that like was with me in elementary school that struggled to like read one sentence. And here he was like in university and he was like a frosh leader. And I was like, look at him go. I was so
impressed. They let anyone in now.
No, my God.
Standards are dropping.
We're going to take it down a peg.
Just the money.
I was proud to
money grab now, isn't it?
I was happy to be a frosh leader. It was great. Because we had so...
Put your frosh away.
You know a little bit about math, right? But so there was a math faculty and they had a fun cheer. It would go sine, cosine, sine, 3.14159. And I thought that was one of the best cheers.
Oh my God.
Because you know what that is,
that
right?
Is so... That 3. Is just 1, a bunch 4. Of nerds that aren't going to get any action.
What's 3.1415?
That's what that is.
Tell me what pi. That is. There we go. Okay, good. I just wanted
everyone
to make
knows
sure.
That.
I'm just making sure.
How special we know pi. not even good nerds. Proper nerds wouldn't even waste their time with that. That's just ridiculous. They're try-hard nerds. Not even proper nerds. All this Big Bang Theory wannabes, and then and now where are you? Now everyone's against Big Bang Theory.
Well, they had a great cheer, and I still remember it to this day. I don't have the best memory for a lot of things, but I still know sine, cosine, sine, 3.14159. I thought it was great. And so, you know how shitty our cheers were? I was in the environmental studies faculty, right? Environmental studies. This was one of our cheers. You can't spell best without ES. That's literally what one of our cheers was.
What's ES for?
Environmental studies.
Oh my God.
So that was our cheer. So imagine
who am I on this?
Sine, cosine, sine, 3.14159. Then being like, you can't spell best without ES? That's terrible because each faculty had its own song.
Is this real? Like, what's going on?
I'm serious.
This is terrible. Yeah. What is this?
Well, I'm just saying, like,
who have I allowed on the podcast? Like, outrageous. Okay.
Okay. You want to play that game?
No, no.
I wish you guys could have seen how I looked at him. But anyway, yeah. Well, did you ever do like a Freshers Week? Were you ever a leader for Freshers Week?
Yeah, did the Freshers Week and then.
But were you a leader? Did you ever do like kind of like do the cheers and stuff? Or do you remember any of the cheers?
No, I just talked to people who wanted to know about our subject.
Wow, riveting. Riveting.
Well, I didn't love the subject, remember?
Oh, that's true. Well, I mean, I wasn't over the moon about environmental studies. Like, I'm probably more passionate about it now than I was then, which is hilarious.
Good.
But here's another thing. I guess one of the only drawbacks I find with my kind of mentality of, like, trying to, like, get over obstacles is that I stayed too long. I mean, you know, you can't live in the past, but even though university didn't light my fire...
Relight my fire.
Is that like Bruce Springsteen?
Take that. Take that. Do you know Take That?
Is that Bruce Springsteen?
They were like the first big UK boy band.
No.
With Robbie Williams.
Oh, I've heard of Robbie Williams.
And then he left.
To obviously bigger and better things.
Well, he had to crack America.
He did.
Eventually.
Yeah. Well,
but he had a lot of setbacks.
Yeah. Well, what were some of his?
Mainly his ego.
Oh.
Yeah. He did a lot of drugs and cocaine as well. Oh, I think. No. Speculation.
Yeah, thankfully I've never been... I mean, probably pot was my biggest thing that I did frequently, but... And like a lot of people say, it's not addictive, but I really do think that what the dangerous thing about pot, though, is it makes you okay with being bored. And that's lethal to productivity.
I think it just helps people become more deadhead.
Mm.
So if that's what you want, knock yourself out.
Yeah.
But I'm not against it.
No,
I'm just,
not at all.
I'm like, you know, it has a lot of medical,
mm-hmm.
therapeutic aspects to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, as Joe Rogan says, something you can grow in your back garden as a plant, why does the government get involved?
Yeah.
You know, if you're not doing it to someone else, it's your own body, you're being responsible that you're not harming or affecting anyone else with it.
Mm-hmm.
Knock yourself out. Like, it's your body.
Yeah.
It's your mind, your choice.
And I was so overactive that for me, I think at times, like, it was almost like a bit of a medication to, like, wind myself down. Because I'm wound up a little bit. I don't know if you would notice, Josh, would you say?
A little bit. But you've been chill at times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either when you're really exhausted or really happy.
Yeah.
So it's the extremes.
Mm.
Good to live in the extremes, but in the middle, a little bit high strung.
Yeah. Yeah. But hey, it's something that I'm learning on improving every day. And yeah, I think nobody's perfect. I'm just happy that, I've started to find things in my life that I think are more fulfilling. I'm going all in on those things. And just try to find people in your life that help bring out the best in you.
Fantastic.
All right, cool. Well, that is another episode of Across the Pond. You guys have a great day.
Have a good one.
I thought that was pretty good. What do you think?
She's from there.
He's from here.
Hanging together.
We make quite a pair.
She's left-handed.
He's right-handed.
Surely not to be disbanded.
We are the Mighty Mounties. Until next time.
Stay awesome.